Chapter 6. Sovereignty. Our primitive armor against responsibility. 10,000 years ago, 100,000 years ago, a big male stood before his people and put his foot down. He had control of his friends and all the tough guys, and as long as he successfully slaughtered all comers, everything was his. There were no laws. He wasn't just the cheese. He was the whole enchilada. He was king, and his every remark or impulsive gesture was the law. Eventually, some kings proclaimed themselves God. It's fairly obvious, really. If I can render you wealthy or dead with a hitch of my brow, what's the difference? And anyway, who are you to say I'm not a god? Soon, others were gods too. By heredity, of course, or by sexual congress. Yes, some gods were even women. Sovereignty was said to have been granted by God, to have derived from him as divine right. It came together with an absolute right to use and abuse all power in any way. Increasingly, though, as does happen, gods met their neighbors. Africans, Goths, Gauls, Mongols, all had their own ideas. Then, gods, by sheer weight of the overwhelming evidence of all likelihood, dwindled to be but kings again. Still, for us, the mere subjects, the answer to, who are you to say, remained the same. I'll shut up. That's who. There were certain moral imperatives upon a king. For example, to look after his powerful circle of friends.
And there were certain practical considerations. For example, keep your eldest son happy. If your eldest son killed you,
he'd now be king. And thus, exactly as it was for his father before him, even killing the king was no problem. Kings learned to play by certain rules, to cooperate on certain terms, and came to arrangements among themselves, or they got merged.
Either way, they each ran their protection businesses and called their turfs nations, and their gangs of nations empires. They looked after mutual interests as allies, including vanquishing all comers, whether from within by rebellion or from without by invasion. Often, kings looked after the people they ruled. Quite evidently, there was good reasons to do so. People fight sooner for the king who is beloved, and fight better, too, than for one who is cruel.
Also, when people get rich, they pay taxes. You give them protection, they give you the juice, you know, the vig. It's a really good racket, always has been, and it is, actually, the oldest. Prostitution racket just doesn't work very well without the protection racket. Funny, too, you can sell them your land. Never mind that it's still your domain anyway. You get the sale money, and you still get to tax their land and their income, and make all the rules. Win-win for you. You're a king. Eventually, society began to chisel out certain rights for non-kings, too. By the time of the Magna Carta, they were using the old French word sovereign, 1250 to 1300, Middle English, alteration by influence of to reign, Old French sovereign, Vulgar Latin supranus. This is from dictionary.com, which says sovereign in equivalent Latin is super for super and anus for one, super one. Upon reading this to my daughter Emily, I asked her to translate a Latin phrase for me. What she came up with was, non potestas sominare sursum haec stercore, homo. You can ask Google Translate, and it will say something like, you can't make this shit up, man. Many of the advantages of sovereignty now extend to most of the people in the best country clubs, who before would have been mere subjects. The rights to travel to other sovereign nations, to expect protection from the law there, be permitted the freedom to return home, are all examples of agreements between sovereign nations for the benefit of their respective citizens. Particularly for those in country clubs, it's not that easy for a person from the slums of Dhaka to get a visa to Disneyland. In our Western country clubs and some others, we all live better now than most kings ever did. But in many other nations, it's meet the new boss same as the old boss. There, only kings and their friends live like kings, while all the rest scramble and tussle to take whatever spills off the royal table.
Among the historical appurtenances to sovereignty that now persist in our modern culture, the most inimical is the rote offering of respect to foreign sovereigns. Not only do we treat them with entirely undeserved respect, it is no surprise to us that our corporations under such foreign rulers are forgiven the strictures of responsibility that we would thrust upon them were they at home. We know this perfectly well and still shrug it off without a moment's pause, because that's the way it is with sovereignty and enterprise. Only Alberta, among the Western country clubs, permits free and unlimited dumping of ultra-toxic tar sands tailings in vast lethal reservoirs on public land beside huge rivers of formerly fresh water that belong to the commons. In places like Ecuador, Nigeria, Indonesia, Kazakhstan, and Chechnya, it is all very Albertan. There are no rules, and the privateers do as they please, as long as the king gets his cut. But the people are on their own when it comes to what's in their water. Win-win for the shareholders, huge oil profits, low royalties, and no pesky human decency considerations about what Fort Chipewyan, downstream from the tar sands, drinks or eats. Clean up your mess. Yeah? Make me. Multinational corporations fully use these sovereign countries and one Canadian province as resorts from the strictures of responsible regulation, running their jurisdictions like thugs and idiots, acting in complete disregard for the welfare of their people. These sovereign scoundrels permit our corporations to gurgitate all hell. Behind the armor of sovereignty, enterprises may perpetrate injustices that would be criminal atrocities in our country club. And so our corporations abroad have made deals with kings who wear black cowboy hats. All of the thugs don't wear black cowboy hats, only some in Nigeria and Alberta. Some wear costumes that make them look like Eddie Murphy in Coming to America. Others don military regalia so ridiculously encrusted with baubles and ribbons as to make a Soviet general raise his prodigious brow in envy. Some just look like they're from Edmonton. These thuggish clowns have one thing they share, the claim of sovereignty. It provides Shell with all the royal excuse a Dutch company needs to utterly disregard the gangsterism, exploitation, and ruthless, self-interested hijacking of their host country's common resources for privateers' personal profit, with absolutely no regard for the slightest human decency. And a good thing it is, too, because such human decency does very little for the Royal Dutch bottom line, or for that of their pimp hosts. A person might ask, what can you tell us about the 400 young women kidnapped where you are working in Nigeria? Shell, a non-human legal person, responds, when we are in Nigeria or any other foreign nation, we have responsibility as guests and representatives of our shareholders to not interfere in our hosts' domestic affairs. Yes, but you pay them hundreds of millions in royalties. They are cozy with you. They relax and remove all responsible regulation. They must feel some pressure to be responsive to your humanitarian concerns. What do you think is happening to those young women today, now? We most certainly do not agree with your emotional characterization. It's preposterous to think that we have any business whatsoever interfering in the internal affairs of our host nation. We are as concerned as anyone about the safety of the girls, and we pray for their safe return. You sit with these men daily. They are rich on your royalties. Do you have no influence? We did not enter into a development agreement with Nigeria so that we could make the ridiculous presumption of interfering in their domestic affairs. Nigeria is a sovereign nation. You eat dinner with them. We have discussed these problems in a friendly way, and we are satisfied that the guy in the black cowboy hat is doing absolutely everything he can to bring about a resolution to this difficult situation. Do you think the young women are being raped right now? Do you have granddaughters that age? Your hysterical questions are impertinent. We completely fulfill our duties as a foreign corporation visiting in Nigeria. Now, Americans, Russians, and other Europeans, and many others, run across borders and do whatever they have to do to get what they want. Then, they run back home, knowing no Lone Ranger will be coming after them. In 2017, shareholders world round will be very pleased with the performance of their corporate representative directors. Sovereignty, is all the excuse shareholders need to utterly disregard the true costs of their increasing net worth. Shareholders the world over, teachers and nurses, pension funds, mutual funds, life insurance companies, and banks all need never consider how many chemicals are dumped, how many people are driven off their land, how many human rights are violated, or workers' rights disregarded, or how much collateral damage is inflicted, whether by Boko Haram, the Janjaweed, Bashar al-Assad's Alawite Ba'ath Party, or Uncle Sam. Dividends will still be declared. Former President of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan, need not worry about his royalties. They will be forthcoming no matter how long the 400 young women are held and raped. Talisman's Albertan and other shareholders may feel the same assurance about their Darfur dividends. The gold medal cheater Vladimir Putin's shares in Bashar al-Assad's gas pipelines remain intact. Rex Tillerson and Exxon are pleased to help Putin and al-Assad make money killing and displacing millions of victims and refugees. That's business. Tar Sands investors are very grateful to future Albertans for the free dumping of toxic waste. All abuse of human rights or responsibilities of freedom, disavowed by claims of sovereignty or any other mockery, will have three elements: the pricks, their help, and those abused. Pricks perpetrate the abuse. Their help are all who work for, buy from, sell to, invest in, profit from, or otherwise benefit from the advantage taken by pricks. Thus, they are themselves pricks designate by the rubbing of shoulders. In another word, us. Country clubs are filled with us pricks and pricks designate. The abused are kept out of our sovereign Western country club by our velvet rope. This abuse of sovereignty will die hard for the whinging and braying of us all, pricks and pricks designate alike, resisting awareness, refusing responsibility, denying complicity, and disavowing the receipt of any advantage from that abuse. Over there. Sovereignty serves us well, contributing in many ways to world order, but we must not permit it to provide refuge for the conduct of criminal irresponsibility or for the masking of its proceeds. It must not be put to the use of scoundrels as an instrument of deprivation, nor may it any longer serve as our armor against stakeholder awareness and responsibility. The corporation's duty to behave with the minimum of human decency and our abject ambivalence to their responsible regulation, together with sovereignty, have bought a life of luxury for a fifth of the world, comfort for another third, and for all the remainder, conditions that for us in our country clubs would be an utter non-starter, ranging from subsistence and degradation to squalor. But sovereignty must not excuse oppression. We now know that in our democratic heritage, the heir to the sovereign is the people. There is a point where a sovereign gets so bad that the good heir has a responsibility to step into their place. And where there is no functioning democracy, rebellion is the time-honored remedy for such abuse. America need only remember. Some things must trump sovereignty. They include universal rights and the conservation of the commons, the natural bounty that has befallen us all. Divine right does not reside in a sovereign, but in us all, same as divine responsibility. A knight must save a maiden. There is a reason. He owes his freedom to the people and is bound by goodness to pay the debt. Another very difficult obstacle to fulfilling our duties as the beneficiaries of freedom and universal rights is the greed of and abuse of power by pricks. Those of us who cannot elevate ourselves above that level will not come along unless made to do so.